Hey, folks, thanks for tuning in to yet another Mouth Fist podcast. And Ryan.
Yes.
We're on podcast 3. Who knew, right?
Yes, episode 2.
Well, technically 2, but really the third installment. This is going to get confusing.
Yeah.
Well, I'm Steve Saunders.
I'm Ryan Speck.
And we are the Mouth Fist podcast. And what have you been up to this week, Ryan, before we get into our subject, which is the Caligula comic books?
Nothing completely interesting for me this week. Caught up on a lot of movies. Finally got around to watching Elite Force 2, The Enemy Within. I watched The Thing and Fright Night, which you had recommended both of them to me. So I got around to watching those. And for some reason, I have never mentioned it yet in the entirety of our podcast recordings, but pretty much every week I am playing Skyrim. So I guess that should be brought up, since that is actually the majority of my time spent doing anything is probably playing Skyrim.
You actually listen to the podcasts while you're playing Skyrim?
Yeah, if I get bored enough, I will put the podcasts on to listen to see if there's anything that we can improve, which mainly comes down to wondering why I let you do so much talking. But
oh, you poor bastard.
But yeah, I listen to podcasts occasionally while playing Skyrim, but I mean, it's gotten to be a bit distracting at this point. But I've got about 280 hours of Skyrim in now, so
Jesus,
really, it's reaching the point where I'm probably gonna get pretty bored with it and not gonna be much left to do.
Enter the point where Steve Saunders comes in and tells Ryan Speck, you really should write The Thin Blue Grime.
I should.
All those hours used playing Skyrim, you could be writing a new novel. Of course,
I've got at least 3 novels I could be writing. I've got a bunch of short stories I could be doing, but instead, playing Skyrim. As soon as I'm done with Skyrim, I'm sure I'll find something else to play. At some point, I'll have to get back to The Witcher 2, which I played a little bit of, but they're releasing a big update for it when they release it on Xbox and PlayStation. They're also releasing this big expansion pack sized bit of stuff for free for the PC.
Nice. I've been essentially scouring GOG.com, the good old games, for new old games to play, because I'm sad like that.
Get yourself some Planescape or something.
Yeah, Planescape's always fun to play. Today I was looking at, I actually noted it. It's so sad. I'm a sad human being. Age of Wonders, which was a tactical fantasy game. So what I've been up to this week, I've also watched Fright Night. I saw The Thing a while back, but
we talked about it briefly last episode. So.
Correct. And also I have watched Zardoz. I watched it last night, something I haven't seen since I was a kid, which
you,
if you've seen
man.
Zardoz. Yeah, I watched it with my dad when I was younger, and I suppose I should have been a very lucky child with all those boobies.
Yeah.
Aside from the boobies and the penis references, it's not exactly horrifyingly bad. I mean, it's not something.
It's weird.
It's no Caligula, you know.
No. It's very strange. It's strangely psychedelic, and it has a lot of sex for a weird fantasy sci-fi film.
Right. But it doesn't have gratuitous gory violence, and it doesn't have any swearing. There's no swear words in the whole thing.
It feels very much like a 70s movie more than something from, what was that, like 1980, 81?
It was 1974, actually, so
really?
It does feel like a 70s
Maybe
movie.
Maybe I'm confusing it with the year that, like, Outland came out or something.
Yes, you are, actually. And in fact, I pointed out to my girlfriend that they call him the Outlander. They call Zed, which is a Sean Connery character, the Outlander throughout the whole movie. And I point out that Outland was a great movie, and I really should watch that one next, because that's probably my favorite Sean Connery film, is Outland.
I've still never seen Outland.
Oh, it's excellent, man. You got to see it. Okay, so you watch Outland, and then we'll talk about it next time. Also, I have to say that Zardoz, there are many elements of Zardoz that are timeless. Like, the technology shown could be anything 300 years from now. So it's still dated in its kind of hippie, weird concepts, but I actually really liked it.
Kind of reminded me of The Prisoner in that way.
Correct. I also point out The Prisoner to my girlfriend when we were watching it, and she did notice it was kind of boring. It's definitely a more... I enjoyed the hell out of it. I was on the edge of my seat the whole time. She, I think, fell asleep. I do recommend Zardoz if you can get past the fact that Sean Connery looks like he's in an orange nappy the whole time.
Yeah. His weird red diaper suspender combo.
Yeah, exactly.
It looks like he just had his period in a big cotton ball that he's wearing around his
pelvis. Pretty much. But the sad fact is, Zardoz is leaps and bounds better than any science fiction you're watching today in theaters. Like, science fiction today in theaters is terrible.
Sunshine.
Well, that's not today, though. That was years ago. But I will agree that Sunshine...
That was a couple of years ago. It was like 2007.
Okay, fine.
And Moon. Moon was like a year ago.
Okay, Moon. Okay.
Source Code was last year.
Oh, Source Code was great. Okay. So, but Zardoz really, like, is... We haven't seen anything really psychedelic sci-fi.
Yeah, I think it's... I mean, it was a very much a thing of its time. In the 70s, especially in the early 70s, you had all of these crazy psychedelic movies. Everything was much more cerebral. I mean, you had Silent Running in the mid-70s.
Right,
everything was
classic.
Much more hard... Even if it wasn't hard science fiction, it was still very much based in concepts.
Oh, Solaris
more than it was like
one.
Action. Yep. Yeah, Solaris.
And of course, 2001 A Space Odyssey, which is... Hands yeah. down, the most boring fucking movie you'll ever watch.
I got through 20, 30 minutes of that, and I was like, it's time for me to go to bed. And if I didn't have to go to bed, I'm not sure if I would keep watching this, because
and it was
it's
3
not
o'clock
going
in the
anywhere.
Afternoon.
Probably, but that's not unusual for me, because I sleep during the day, so...
But that said, I did enjoy 2001. I love the concept, but I'd rather read it as a book. It makes a much better book than a film. It looks visually great. It's what I call a film book or something, where you can just play it in the background while you read the book. 2001, of course, for its time. If you want to watch a modern version of 2001, more limited in scope, but has the same feel, but actually makes it compelling, is Moon. Moon yeah. definitely is a homage to 2001, A Space Odyssey.
Yeah, Duncan Jones really has a great grasp of science fiction, making it interesting while also making it cerebral.
Right, exactly. Before we get to Caligula, let's discuss very quickly Fright Night and The Thing.
Yes.
The remake of Fright Night. I don't know if you've seen the original, Ryan. Have
I
you
have.
Seen the original?
Yeah.
Let me set this up for the folks. Also, there's probably going to be spoilers, so if you really hate spoilers and you're going to have a total, like... bizarre hentai menstrual fit over spoilers, I highly recommend just stop listening right now and never listen to us again.
We should
again.
Have just called this the spoil cast or something.
We really should. We really should.
We're going to spoil everything we talk about, because it's not yeah. possible for us to talk about a subject without just absolutely going over everything and tearing it apart.
The only thing is, we might not touch on a specific twist. Like, if we were talking about Jacob's Ladder, we wouldn't say it's a near-death experience the entire time. Spoiler, but, you know, we would say, oh, and it really, really lends to the huge twist at the end.
Rosebud is the sled.
Oh, don't give the twist away to Star Wars, dude. No, that was a Serbian movie, wasn't it?
Yeah, a Serbian film, yes.
The sled.
It turns out that Rosebud is the sled.
Is Rosebud the sled?
That the child is raped with.
In a Darth Vader helmet, yes. Luke, I am your father, and your ass is tight. So, just went there. I don't think spoilers are going to be a
I don't know how many
away.
Podcasts are dropping a Serbian film references or making Star Wars rape jokes, but at least we're at the cutting edge of something.
And we laugh at our own jokes. So we're going to discuss, like, okay, I'm going to set this up. The Thing came out in 1982. The one that came out in 2011 is actually a prequel, and he's somewhat of a remake, and I call it a pre-make, of... The 1982 is The Thing. So it comes out in 2011, but actually happens before. It's a lot like, it's like a better version of the Star Wars prequels, to be honest with you. And then Fright Night, which is a remake, a total remake
yes.
to the original, which came out in 87?
Yeah, you can't do like prequels to like Fright Night or anything. It's not the type of movie that lends itself to that. Yeah, the original Fright Night was 85.
85, thank you. 1985. So let's cover The Thing.
The 2011 Thing.
Correct. Great cast. Great. Mm-hmm. Great. Oh, beautiful, beautiful cinematography. Holy yeah. shit. It's one of the prettiest films. I have a thing for Arctic landscapes. So Antarctica looks gorgeous. I've always wanted to go there, much to my girlfriend's chagrin. She's like, no, I don't want to ever go there. I'm like, I'd love it. It's amazing. I love the look of it. I'll sit around and fap to like glaciers all day and icebergs. So that was beautiful. The acting was great. The pacing was pretty decent, but yeah. I felt it lacked tension that the first film had, which was John Carpenter's The Thing, which definitely had tension. Oh, and the score, the music score. I don't know. I don't know offhand who redid Enrico Morricone.
Yeah, Morricone did the original score.
Morricone did the original score.
The
it
music
was excellent.
For this one is Marco Beltrami.
Oh, thank you. It's Marco Beltrami, who I'm actually familiar with some of his other stuff. And
yeah, I mean, he's pretty fucking accomplished.
Right, right. And the thing, the music for this film is as good as the second, and it's actually, in many ways, in my opinion, a better film technically.
Oh yeah,
as in it's just bigger budget.
It's got the budget to be a better movie, so they used it wisely. They didn't turn it into too much of a CGI monster fest. People will probably complain and disagree and say it was nothing but CGI monsters. We want shitty practical effects.
Right.
Because that seems like a good use of time to do a lot of complicated practical effects that may or may not look any good and then have to be touched up with CG anyway, when now CG is probably just as cheap as practical.
Correct.
At least for a large budget studio production.
Correct. However, like, John Carpenter, and, you know, I'm a big fan of his stuff, but I would say The Thing is probably one of his best films, if not the best. And he did manage to have a really good sense of tension. My other problem is the fact that it's not very cold in Antarctica, apparently. I know you have to see the actors' faces and all that other stuff, but the first film did a much better job of showing how fucking cold Antarctica is. Even, and it's wintertime in Antarctica down there. And there's the main lead actress who was... What was that? Mary Elizabeth Winstead?
Yes.
Or Mew. Yeah. And she's running around without anything on her head. And it's crazy. Like, that's crazy talk. You can't do that. But aside from that, I thought it was a pretty decent film. Definitely a 3.5 out of 5 stars just based on what I saw kind of film. I would give the film 3.5 fists out of 5.
Yeah. I would probably go more for 4 out of 5.
Four mouths out of five?
Yeah, if I have to give mouths. I thought you were on a 10-point scale and I was on a 5-point scale.
Oh, I change the scale every time. Oh,
man. Well, in that case, I'm going to give it 9 out of 12.
Are your mathematical ratios, how are they doing there? Is that still like 4 out of 5?
I'm just being silly. I'd say it's a 4 out of 5 movie, 8 out of 10 type of deal. I probably wouldn't go any higher because I don't feel it's like that close to being a perfect film, but I think it's a really good movie. I think it's really solid. I thought the tension was probably better than you did. I thought they did a nice job of building up the sense of paranoia without like just letting it drag on forever, because it was a movie. It was fairly tight. I mean, it was what, an hour and a half?
Yeah, it's not a very long movie. I think it clocks in around 2 hours, but it's between an hour and a half and 2 hours. The pacing is excellent.
It feels pretty quick. I mean, especially since they do a lot of building up the story. No, it's an hour and 43 minutes with credits.
See, I got that right. It's between an hour and a half and 2 hours. So
almost all movies are between an hour and a half and 2 hours. But
shush you.
Without credits, awesome. It's probably about an hour and 34 minutes of actual film you're watching. So, I mean, you got to move it along.
I do think it ended up being, I actually think in order to save time, they actually have the end of the film go through the credits. Because the film actually ends with Kate's fate.
Well, yeah. Also, you know, you kind of know what happens, and it's kind of just giving you those little glimpses of, they don't give you a whole scene because the whole scene is unnecessary, because it's just kind of telegraphing the beginning of the next movie. It's giving you that implication without necessarily having to play the whole thing out, because all of the information is not necessary.
And what about the changes? There are some changes in the film. There's no, like, for instance, they don't use thermite charges.
I have not seen the original in so long that I do not even remember any changes that there might have been.
How the Norwegian team digs up or digs up the thing, you know, the creature, how they do that is with thermite charges in the first one, and I don't even seem to remember in a new thing them actually taking a picture of the whole team. And there's some minor differences in what occurred, although they do a great job of showing what happened, like why the axe is in the wall and in the Norwegian base camp that they found in the first film. However, like, I do think it was a cop-out. Like, they didn't show the guy cutting his throat or anything like that. They just like, oh, and by the way, the guy who you found frozen in his chair, he's there. He killed himself off camera.
I mean, they may have had a scene, but they had to cut it for time or for pacing. I mean, that might be something worth checking out for the DVD or something, seeing if there's a deleted scene on there.
Worth picking up. I mean, I could talk about this film for 2 hours. I mean, it's a good movie. I would say worth picking up. I actually am probably the only human being alive that would love to see another Thing movie that's a sequel. I would enjoy seeing a sequel to the 1982's The Thing, or a sequel to this, or something that converges both of them. Maybe the Russian base camp or something like that. That would be great. I don't know about, what do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it kind of, the fact that they did change some things kind of sets it up that they could do a remake if they really felt comfortable with it, and that would, like, kind of explain away those inconsistencies between the two movies by the fact that it's not a prequel to the original, but a prequel to the remake. But, I don't know. I don't know if they should do anything else with it. I think they did as much as they probably can with the concept now.
Well, considering how it was critically lambasted and bombed with fans, and I don't think it did very well in theaters, it's unlikely a sequel.
Yeah, you will can't result. Make fans happy, especially fans of horror movies, because oh God, no. Almost inevitably, if somebody... It's funny that people love all these shitty Friday the 13th movies, but the moment you remake Friday the 13th and call it a remake as opposed to just yet another sequel in a long line of moronic sequels, then people go ape shit as if somehow the original Friday the 13th, and really Friday the 13th Part 2 is what got remade because that was the first one with Jason. Like, people go ape shit as if that was actually a good movie and not just some horrible thrown together piece of shit that all of the scenes pretty much were ripped off from Italian horror movies directly.
Yeah, I haven't watched Friday the 13th film since I was a child, so I
you're not missing anything. Like,
yeah, I haven't seen the remake, although
the remake is better than any of the other movies because they're all dog shit bad.
Isn't the remake Friday the 13th that was done by Marcus the same Nispel. Guy that did Pathfinder, right?
Yeah, Marcus Nispel, Pathfinder, Conan the Barbarian. I believe he also did the remake of Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
I just rewatched Pathfinder the other night. Actually, we picked it up really cheap at the video store. Great movie. I don't give a fuck what anyone thinks. If to anyone who thinks it's a shit movie, I have the following eloquent statement: go fuck yourself. So seriously, that joke never gets old. But great movie. Wish it was as good. I wish Conan was that good. Conan was terrible.
Yeah, I mean, really, as far as direction, pacing, writing goes, it seems like Conan is the weakest movie he's done, which is kind of sad.
Although the guy that plays Conan is Jason Momoa did a fantastic job.
Yeah, he was good. He was good for the part. All people's bitching and moaning about that, they were wrong.
They're idiots.
They were completely wrong. I mean, everybody has their specific vision. A lot of people just identify Arnold Schwarzenegger so completely with Conan that no one else can please them at all.
And I am being a little bit, it's a little bit too much hyperbole. Like, it wasn't a terrible film. It's just Conan wasn't as exciting as it should have been. It was kind of like, apparently Hyboria is a trailer park and it's very small. There's no sense of scale. Oh, the horror things. I'm going to say something that's going to really piss a lot of people off, probably all four people that listen to this, but horror movie fans also tend to be heavy metal fans.
Yeah.
And so that combination, you know, it's terrible. And I like heavy metal and I like horror movies, but I wouldn't really call myself one of these people. And just ask my friend Dusty Peterson, who is an amazing artist. I shouldn't make fun of Dusty. He's awesome. He's dustypeterson.net. His shit is amazing. But the whole thing is, like, I love, like, talking and arguing with my metalhead horror movie fans, friends. So,
yeah, I mean, it's interesting that metal is a genre that is widely accepting of all the different styles. Most metal fans just like any metal just because it's metal. They're actually a little bit too accepting of anything just because they like everything within the genre, which is in vast difference to, like, industrial music fans, where if it's not exactly what they like, it's shit and it's not real industrial.
I just think people like to bitch. It was the same in jazz music when I was a jazz musician in school. I mean, it's...
Oh, God.
That's not a euphemism for anything, but I got an A. So I was going to say real quick on a totally different subject is I Facebooked that we were recording our Mouth Fist podcast, and a buddy of mine actually asked if we can ever discuss sometime whether 40K is sexist or not. I'm just going to say bitches with bolters, nuns with guns. Or is it bolter bitches? Yeah, so...
Is 40K sexist? No.
It is aimed at 14-year-old boys, but
I mean, but war is sexist in a way, isn't it? I mean, men tend to fight it, but...
That's true. In fact, if war wasn't man-oriented, apparently war would just consist of death camps if women ran it, right? Right? Is that... And the hate mail comes in, so...
Media@mediagauntlet.com.
That's
Send
right.
Send Steve all of your hate mail, because I didn't say shit. I said Warhammer's not sexist, and I said that, yeah, most of the races don't have gender. Eldar, full of females fighting. I mean, the Empire is supposed to be totalitarian, patriarchal, and kind of an indictment of both fascism,
Catholic
religion,
Church.
Specifically the Catholic Church. You have all these totalitarian concepts. Why would it not be? It's going to be kind of sexist, but it's intentional because the Empire is not the good guys. There are no good guys. That's the whole point of the universe, even in the fact that it focuses so wholly on humans, because we can at least understand the human condition and they like to focus on it. They're not good. They're a bunch of douchebags. I mean, they're people that came out of the Dark Ages. Just because it's 40,000 years later doesn't mean it's been an uphill technological progression. There's a complete fallout.
Correct.
Society was destroyed. There was a Dark Age of humanity where they basically went back to the Stone Age and have had to claw their way back up. So you're left with yet another high-tech society that's going through its Dark Age.
Well said. And to directly address your point, Ian, as that's my buddy who asked this, basically Warhammer 40K, also got to look at it from a business standpoint. The majority of Warhammer 40,000 fans are male. They're boys, you know, and I said 14-year-old boys. Really, it's more like 24-year-old boys on average.
These days, yeah.
And
you got to have a fucking job to be able to play Warhammer.
It's true. And basically, a lot of young men look at the miniatures and think that's totally for fagzors, and there should be an app for that. And the thing is it sexist, though? I think the guys that do Warhammer, the fluffers over there, do a very good job of trying to include women and make them badass. You can say the Sisters of Battle are sexist, but they're also incredibly badass. So, and they don't have sex with anybody. So they're nuns with guns.
Yeah.
And in many ways, they're more badass than Space Marines because they're not physically manipulated. Space Marines are essentially just a bunch of barbarians who are picked up from various planets and then they just essentially
genetically modify them.
And they're indoctrinated. Whereas Sisters of Battle are just fucking religious zealots, and they're way more badass. In fact, I would actually say a battle sister is the most badass person in Warhammer, period. And there are no other badass. Like a Space Marine doesn't even come close to the badassitude of a battle sister. Battle sisters, I love playing them in Dawn of War, by the way. They're hilarious. But they are this, like, just sadistic, mean bitches, and they're awesome. But they're also cool because you want them to show up because they're also a bit kind. You know, they can be very kind and they're, like, you know, nurturing, you know, like women are supposed to be or whatever. But the sexism, I'm sure there's some feminist group who's going to jump in and say that they are sexist and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, well, if more women played 40K, then, you know, maybe that would change. But I don't think they're intentionally sexist.
Yeah. How can you have any kind of representation of a sexist society that isn't then deemed sexist? Like, can you make a movie about racism and not have it called racist for depicting racism then?
Yeah, I agree. And the other thing is, I'm going to do a film about the Middle Ages. Oh my God, you don't have a female hero? You're sexist.
Historical accuracy is often sexist.
Xena is totally sexist towards men because she would have just been breeding children back then. So anyway, what?
Yeah, history does not look kindly on like broad concepts like those.
Broad concepts.
No. But if anything, like Warhammer 40,000 is trying to take historical concepts and transferring them into a science fiction setting.
Yeah, exactly. And it's not nearly as tongue in cheek and satire oriented as it used to be. Please make it like that again. So I do think they should have female space marines. And female inquisitors are really cool. And you should have female rogue traders. Those are neat. Female orcs would be kind of cool.
Female assassins. You've had that in the past.
Yeah. Female orcs. Yeah, they're all like national organizational.
Orcs are not non-gender.
They're definitely gender
neutral. I mean, they're fungal.
They're called boys.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's...
Because they're all fungi, right? They're all fungi.
They're fungal creatures. They really have no gender, but I mean, they're making fun of like Cockney people. So
they're making fun of, it's also soccer hooligans. Yeah. Like the orcs are soccer hooligans.
Is a very masculine thing to it because you're making fun of, I mean, if you were making fun of American football fans, you wouldn't be filling it full of women. You'd be making a bunch of dude jokes.
Yeah, it's the orcs are the British version of backwoods Bible Belt football fans. They're basically soccer hooligan skinheads. That's the best way to put like orcs. Okay, so we're gonna talk about
Fright Night,
and you've seen both versions, Ryan. What would you say about
Fright Night? I've seen both versions. I think it's interesting. I like the way that they tried to remake it without... I mean, sometimes you remake a movie, you basically just copy and paste the original script with better dialogue over the original. This one, they decided to change it up, make it a little more relevant. Obviously, you can't have, like, some weird Elvira-esque dude hosting a local TV show be taken even vaguely seriously in this day and age. That doesn't exist anymore. I mean, as it is, like, you have syndicated Elvira in some cities, but even that's still... a little rare.
Right, right. Yeah, turning into
and
a magic
and
show.
And it's kitschy. I mean, nobody's watching, like, syndicated crap horror movies anymore. The fact that they kind of transferred David Tennant as this guy who is this Chris Angel-like magician. And really, he was one of the... I mean, it had a good sense of humor, but he was one of the highlights of the movie. Like, David Tennant just, like, played it to the hilt.
Oh, man, David Tennant did such a great job. I mean, I enjoyed him. My first exposure to David Tennant was on Doctor Who, and I enjoyed him as the Doctor, but man, I really loved him in Fright Night. The whole cast is awesome. They do an amazing job.
It was the first time I had really seen Anton Yelchin outside of Star Trek. So.
And Terminator and Terminator 3 or 4. 4?
Yeah,
Terminator Salvation.
I forgot about him in Salvation entirely, but I mean, it's the first time you get to see him in a real lead role, mm-hmm. where he delivers a lot of dialogue, you get to see him act. It was weird to have Toni Collette in there too. It was kind of strange that she chose to come in for the mother role, but I mean, it was a really interesting cast. I mean, Christopher, what is it, Mintz Plasse?
Oh yeah, he's always good.
He got a kind of a strangely small role. I thought he would actually have more of a central role. I mean, I thought the part in the original movie was actually somewhat larger. Or it felt a little meatier. It felt like there was a little more to it. He just kind of shows up at the beginning, disappears, and then shows up later with the delivery at the end and then gets killed. Spoiler. And then...
Spoiler.
We warned you fuckers. Spoilers. Yeah, that was pretty much it. He had the beginning and probably what, at the end of the second act. Mm-hmm. And that's it. That's all he was in the movie. It felt like the original Ed character was spread a little more throughout and wasn't quite so arch when he did show back up. I mean,
we were never sure that he got killed. We're pretty sure he dies in this one.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Pretty sure.
pretty sure he's pretty dead.
Sure. Yeah, I didn't hate the girl that played Amy, and usually the female leads are kind of annoying. Man, Amanda Bierce was a totally weird choice in the original mm-hmm. one. She did not really fit the, like, horror tropes at the time, which is good in a way, but I mean, I don't know if William Ragsdale and Amanda Bierce were the best couple for a horror movie to begin with at that time period. But
and just for our listeners' own personal knowledge, Amanda Bierce went on to become Marcy on, you know, the lesbian. I mean, she became a very outspoken lesbian later on.
Yeah, and she also directed a lot of the episodes of Married with Children, which she was
correct.
On.
And she was great. She was great in Married with Children, and she's a great outspoken advocate for gay rights, unless I'm completely wrong.
Oh, no, you're right. That's Amanda Bierce.
And just seeing her in a role of, like, speaking of sexism, right, like, totally goes, like, the original Fright Night was fun and everything, but really the real reason to watch the original Fright Night was... what's his name? The Sarandon guy.
Chris Sarandon?
Chris Sarandon, thank you. He was the real reason, and the guy that played Ed, Evil Ed, in the original one.
Yeah, I found him kind of annoying.
Evil Ed? He went on to be a gay porn star or something like that, I think. You know, like, yeah, it was very interesting. Like, speaking of stuff like that, so, but Chris Sarandon, to me, was the whole reason to watch the film, and then...
Now, the one upside was Chris Sarandon did the cameo in this one.
I must have totally missed the cameo.
I'm pretty sure he played the guy in the car that runs into them and gets out and is like yelling at him, "What the fuck are you doing? Why'd you stop in the middle of the road?" Yeah. And then gets ripped apart by Colin Farrell. That was Chris Sarandon. Yeah. Obviously, he looks a lot older now and less like a swarthy Lothario, but...
A swarthy Lothario. There is no other podcast around that uses swarthy Lothario... seriously, in a sentence.
Nope.
And I would say that, once again, to quote, semi-quote or para-quote me on my In Bruges babble, Colin Farrell, once again, awesome.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And this got to show off his, like, comic abilities. He's not playing a lot of funniness to the character, but there's sort of kind of a... I mean, it's kind of got, like, a dark humor to his character. He's very kind of, like, blasé about the killing and kind of toying with people. So, it, I mean, it takes a certain amount of, like, comic ability to pull that off.
He's an amazing actor.
I mean, you can't see it in a movie like Miami Vice, where he's playing this very terse, stern, emotionless character.
He still did a really good job.
It was a great movie. I love it. But, I mean, I'm a big Michael Mann fan. But at the same time, like, this, you can really see his ability to, like, act. Because
the range.
Yeah, it's got a lot more range to the character. It's got a kind of a winking humor to it. I mean, I can see why he chose to do it, because it's... It seems like fun. It seemed like a fun movie to do. It had a lot of humor throughout. I kind of wish there was more of it. I kind of thought it would be a little bit bigger of a movie. Mm-hmm. So I was a little let down to a certain degree. But, I mean, it wasn't bad. I think my expectation of it being probably a little bigger and better was probably the only thing that made it seem less than great.
Still better than the original.
Oh, yeah. Well...
leaps and bounds.
I mean, 80s cheese horror films, as much as people like to latch themselves onto them because of the cult of memory these days, everybody mm-hmm. wants to fetishize their youth
and
nostalgia itself. Like, the NES was so much better than all the games we've got these days. Fucking Super Mario Brothers was the best shit ever. Legend of Zelda, why did we make another game? It's like, go fuck yourself.
The biggest fuck you of nostalgia is the Dungeons and Dragons cartoon. That is, like, basically a gigantic string of fuck yous to nostalgia. It's like, oh, you thought it was a great cartoon? I thought it was a great cartoon. Then I watched it again. It makes the old Thundercats cartoons look like... It just makes it look awesome. It makes it look like Murder, She Wrote or something.
Dude, it makes Robert Burbles seem like the best idea ever.
Ever. And I was also going to ask you what your favorite moment in Fright Night was.
You know, it's really hard to say... I mean, if I had watched it yesterday, I would probably have a much more vivid idea of moments that, like, I was, like, laughing or, like, slapping my own leg in, like, humor and enjoyment. I can't think of off the top of my head, like, after a week specifically, what really I loved. I mean, I liked the really surprising moment, spoiler, when he takes Doris, his captured neighbor, out into the sun and she bursts into flames.
That was awesome.
That was pretty good because I did not see that coming. I knew something was going to happen, but I did not expect that.
It was pretty sudden. My favorite moment is also has to do with Doris, is when the Colin Farrell character, when Jerry is feeding on her.
Oh, and she does the finger to the lips to keep quiet.
Oh, I watched that like twice.
That was a good touch. I mean, and she pulled it off really well. I mean, that could have been a totally throwaway part, but, like, I mean, just some chick that looks like a fucking stripper. That's all they needed for the role, but she actually did it really well.
That was like that's really more on the director, but also her. It was a really good team effort. And the thing is, and the editor, like everyone involved, that I would call that moment one of the best moments in any kind of horror film, period. It just, that's the tension I was looking for in The Thing. That had it. That actually encapsulated more tension than The Thing movie did, in my opinion. I just feel that moment it gave me the willies. That was both beautiful and creepy at the same time. So it was really, really cool. Like, it really got me. I don't know about anyone else who saw the film thinks the same thing, but that moment in Fright Night is one of the best moments in horror movie history.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but it definitely was very effective. I think it was yet another good job on a remake. It seems like the horror remakes I don't have as many problems with. Probably because horror movies are kind of made to be disposable. They're just made to be exploitation films that draw teenagers into theaters. They're not made to be, like, some sort of brilliant movie that's going to stand the test of time. So
yeah, it draws teenagers in the theaters to watch teenagers drawn into, like, a slaughter fest. It's horror movies aren't very horrible or scary. Like, when people ask me what my favorite horror movie is, I go, I don't have one. If you want to name one that terrified me, it's Jacob's Ladder. Terrified me as a child, it's Jaws. And that's pretty much it. Like, or Alien, but that's because Alien looked a giant penis monster. No 6-year-old should watch that. Thanks, Dad. You know, like, that's... Now that makes me sound like I said, as a six-year-old, I watched my dad's giant penis monster. I'm not saying that. No. My dad is an awesome father. I love him. And he'll probably listen to this and be like, God damn that kid. So,
yeah, I don't know. I don't even know if I have a favorite horror movie. I probably watch a lot more horror than you do. Or at least I used to. I used to be a lot more interested in horror as a genre, I guess. I don't like horror movies, but I appreciate watching them.
Oh, I watch a lot of horror movies. I just don't talk about them very much because they're so unimpressive. Like they're pretty crappy. Yeah, I mean, if I would call The New Fright Night one of my favorite horror movies. I mean, I did like that one that I think had, was it a John Cusack movie where they're trying to survive, they rent a room and...
1408?
Was it 1408? I don't know if it was 1408. It was the other one. Not the Stephen King one. There's another one that was like 1408. Apparently...
Oh, the like ghost housey one?
No. They rent a room in like a hotel and it's like a fucking slaughter fest. Like they film it and watch it and then they escape and they try to get across the parking lot and the guys... Anyway, and there was a whole bunch of movies like that because apparently that's how Hollywood works.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
If you ever need proof that Hollywood makes the same kinds of movies at once, that's because they're all trying to rip each other off. That's, like a script goes around and they all decide to make their own versions of it. Maybe it was 1408, but...
1408, it was about... I mean, if it was John Cusack, that's one of the few movies he's been in the past few
years. Oh, no, I'm thinking of Identity with John Cusack. So that's... A totally different film.
Identity, yeah. Identity, I love.
But it's not Identity, it's...
That's like a psychological thriller, though.
No, but I'm not thinking of Identity. I'm just thinking, I think I confused 1408 John Cusack with another film, a film that predates 1408 by like a year or two, of where someone rents a hotel room and it turns out to be a slaughter fest.
It's not Bug, is it?
No.
That's the only other hotel...
Vacancy. Vacancy. Oh, Vacancy. That's what I'm thinking of.
Oh, yeah. Well, Vacancy was awesome because it was directed by the director of Control.
Oh, yeah. That's
Nimrod why. Antal.
Yeah, Nimrod. Yeah, that dude. The Hungarian director, right?
Yeah. I thought he was awesome. He also directed Predators.
Oh, yeah. I love Predators. That was a great movie.
I thought Predator was an okay movie.
It was fun.
Well directed. He, so far since doing Control, he's come to America. He did Vacancy. He did Armored with...
haven't seen that.
With Milo Ventimiglia and who else? Matt Dillon, Lawrence Fishburne. Fred Ward. It's kind of a movie
about...
Wow,
that's some of my favorite actors. Huh?
Yeah, it's about guys from an armored truck company. His like co-workers decide to steal a truck with $42 million in it, and then this new guard decides he's not going to go along with it and locks himself inside the armored car while they're trying to get in. You would probably find that interesting.
Somehow it sounds familiar. I wonder if I saw it and never knew the title of the film, but cool. I'll have to check it out. I mean, Control also, by the way, shouldn't be confused with the Ian Curtis Joy Division.
No, this is Control with a K. With K-O-N-T-R-O-L-L. Yeah, it's about people that check tickets in the subway system below
Budapest.
Budapest, the Budapest subway system, which is what, the oldest in the world.
Exactly. Yeah, I believe it is.
It's a weird movie. It's kind of like, it's got a very Eastern European feel to it. Like if you ever saw Night Watch, that sort of texture to the movie.
That in Hungary is like an alien, even as far as Eastern Europe is concerned, it's totally alien.
But there's something also kind of Guy Ritchie-ish, I guess, about the kind of like scumbaggy characters, these kind of like beaten down scumbaggy characters that are working this horrible job together. That's kind of like very Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. So it's kind of like got a weird fantasy element and this kind of Guy Ritchie element. So yeah, I highly recommend Control.
Fun fact of the day, kids, Budapest is actually two cities, Buda and Pest. Moving on, I guess we should probably move on from, we both love Fright Night, and we've talked, we've mentioned a whole bunch of other movies. Your show notes will probably be insane once again.
Yeah, I mean, it helps that we both enjoy watching movies, whether or not they're perfect or good. We're not fucking Siskel and Ebert back in the day, like nitpicking everything and whining constantly.
What was the movie that Ebert wrote, Beyond the Valley of the Dolls?
Yeah, it was basically a Teddy Russ Meyer movie. Yeah, Russ Meyer movie, screenplay and story by Roger Ebert. It's a sequel in name only to Valley of the Dolls, about an all-girl rock band going to Hollywood to make it big.
And here's the thing. I was talking about Beyond Valley of the Dolls with my girlfriend yesterday when we were watching, or last night when we were watching Zardoz. And it occurred to me that being a movie critic, now I do like Roger Ebert. I mean, I'm not one of those people that hates him or whatever. I don't always agree with Roger Ebert.
I don't like Roger Ebert because he is often pretentious, and I like how people kind of decide to be a fan of him when they agree with his review of something, when he comes out for movies that wouldn't normally be regarded as great, like Dark City he loved, right, and did like, yeah, a commentary track on, but right, then he will say the stupidest shit, like, endlessly, year after year, talk about how games don't deserve First Amendment protection because, yeah, they're not art, they're not stories, they're just idiotic time killers. He's a tool.
Yeah, keep in mind, but I like Generalissimo Franco of Spain as well, which probably doesn't make any sense. It's probably because it's saying I like Adolf Hitler is wrong, right? So
yeah, but it would be the third episode in a row you did it anyway. So
I just like studying them. But the thing about Roger Ebert is, I mean, he didn't say, I only think he said Crank was like one of the best action films ever made. So that automatically makes his opinion worth shit. And also, yeah, also the other thing is, and by the way, if you don't think Crank is one of the best movies, their action films ever made, and should be on every classic action film list, your opinion is nothing. And I think
Crank,
Sean
was
Payne,
okay. Crank 2 was better.
So we can argue about that, but I think Sean Payne from Cyanotic would, yeah, agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, I believe Sean said something about that today.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about. It's like, if you don't think Crank is one of the best action movies, you're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, though Sean also thinks that the Thing remake was terrible, so what the fuck does he know?
Well, okay, but that's, we're going back to heavy metal fans and
fanboyism,
horror movies.
Fanboyism, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
Sean's a fanboy.
Yeah, I was going to say about Roger Ebert really quick is, him being a valued movie critic would be like if you read one of my comics and all it was a copy-paste excerpt of a German shit porn and then in a World War II comic. And that would be like if I did like Secret Cross or Devil Eggs and it was just basically a copy-paste from the script of a shit porn. That's beyond the Valley of the Dolls. And why Roger Ebert is considered a great movie critic, because he should have never
considered
made
a great
him.
Critic, but not many people consider him a great writer. I think he kind of cops to the movie not being that great, but
he does, and he shouldn't, like, he should have just never did that. If you're gonna be a critic
the
for the rest of your life,
the other problem is being a critic drains the shit out of people's creativity, their compassion, yeah, their ability to enjoy films, because when you see a film basically every day all year long and you're not watching movies for fun, you're watching every single movie that comes out just to pick it apart, especially for decade after decade after decade, it basically, yeah, destroys your ability to just enjoy movies anymore without it being aimed exactly at you. When I used to write music reviews, I was able to critically pull myself away from what I actually thought about the music, and I didn't say this shit is fucking boring, why would anyone listen to this? I would talk about the fact that if you are into this type of music, you will like this album.
Right.
But movie critics, after a while, you just can't do that anymore because they don't spend enough time seeing movies they enjoy.
Well,
because
watching
a movie is a time-consuming effort. It's not like listening to a song. It's something that eats up your brain, and if you watch like two or three movies a day, how are you going to have time to fit in a movie you've seen multiple times that you enjoy, especially on deadline?
Right. Agreed. And the other thing is, like, with any kind of criticism or critic or whatever, like reviews, this can happen with like comic books or whatever. You want to impress your readers to constantly get some kind of, well, response, some kind of feedback, and it becomes more and more, and eventually you start writing really nasty reviews just to get feedback. So even if you did like it,
yeah, I mean, part of it's frustration, too. You're working a day job. I mean, yeah, if you were writing about things every day, one day sooner or later, you're going to have an incident where you're just not happy and you see something you don't love and you're just going to piss on it just because you're not happy that day.
Basically, in the end, it's probably best not to listen to critics too much because
there, I guess, is a certain validity to the herd criticism mentality. At the same time, like, listening to critics is good when it's a matter that the average Joe isn't going to understand. Like, I don't give a shit about the average person's thoughts on, like, Drive. If you right. didn't like Drive, you're a cunt. I don't care. Like, that was one of the best movies of the past decade. I mean, and if you don't get it because you're not well-studied enough in film to think that you thought you were going to go in and get an action, drive-in revenge film or something that you thought you were watching faster with The Rock, then you deserve to be let down. Shut the fuck up about it. It's not because the movie's bad. It's because that you came in expecting the completely different movie.
That's true. That's true. It's like,
if I go to like Night at the Museum expecting like a raunchy R-rated comedy and then complain about how it wasn't funny enough for my taste, like, weren't enough jokes about fucking dogs. It's like,
and yet,
you're gonna think I'm a fucking moron.
And yet, Ryan and I were completely unimpressed with Bridesmaids.
Yeah, Bridesmaids. It was just so incredibly bland. It was like maybe because people talked it up a lot, talked about how funny it was, that ruined some of it. I mean, it was okay. It was mediocre. I like the actors. I like a lot of the people in it. It's just like, it felt like it was wasted on them. It was kind of depressing.
Well, the movie itself serves the purpose of, hi there, are you used to watching PG-13 comedies? And are you a woman who's tired of watching the same bullshit, like girls get together, Sex in the City bullshit? Well, hey, we have a movie for you. Now, for like me and Ryan, like, we've already like watched the shit out of these things. Like, The Hangover wasn't far enough. The Hangover is like a fucking Bambi film to us. So there's not enough people getting raped with watermelons. Like, what, you know,
maybe Bridesmaids is a good halfway step between like watching Sex and the City and watching the Hangover, like, I mean, if you want some good shit, go watch fucking The Goods or Hot Tub Time Machine.
Or
Horrible Bosses was pretty good.
Yeah, loved the Horrible Bosses as well. Colin Farrell's also in that movie. See, the guy's just
playing comedy well and just completely willing to debase himself for the part to make himself look and be disgusting.
He's willing to play like gay and bisexual characters, and he is willing to play horrible people, great
people. He's willing
people.
To completely mock himself in his own image. So yeah.
They really need to do, like, I want to see a Crank movie with Colin Farrell. That's what I want to see. I mean, like, I love Jason Statham, love him, want to have his babies, but I want more Colin Farrell babies.
Plus, Statham's, his dance card's pretty full.
Yeah,
he has plenty of work at the moment. He's got some new film coming out that looks like exactly like every other movie he's ever made. It's like
action film.
It's like some action film where I forget what the deal is. He's a hired killer or something, ends up protecting some 12-year-old girl for some unknown reason. Some very like professional meets the transporter type plot.
You know what my favorite Jason Statham film is? Revolver.
You know, I have not seen that. I watched it once when I had a fever.
Watch the British version.
Well, I did watch the British version, but
the US version is actually radically different. So
really, you know, I've never seen the American version. So I was sitting with a laptop in my rental house by myself with a fever in December of 2005, right after moving to Seattle. I'm sure you will remember that time period since I stayed with you the first night we were in town.
That's right. I remember.
Yeah, I'm laying there. I have a fever. I watch this fairly confusing movie thinking it's going to be like another another average Guy Ritchie film. I was probably expecting what like eventually came with Rock and Rolla, but I watched Revolver and I'm already feverish and out of it. I'm like, what the fuck did I just watch? And then I forgot everything that happened in it. I vaguely remember Andre from Outkast and somebody else playing chess. And I think Mark Strong was in there, and the whole thing didn't make a whole lot of sense. And the ending was like,
it was the guy that played Pussy.
Okay, I just need to watch this again. Vincent Pastore?
The guy that played Pussy on Sopranos.
Yeah, Vincent Pastore.
Yeah, I think that's the other guy. Yeah, great movie.
So confusing when you're not expecting it and you were kind of not following most of the movie. You're just kind of like waiting for it to be a different film and it never is. I need to watch it again. I mean, because I love Guy Ritchie. I love pretty much everything he's ever done. And I like the fact that it was a more cerebral, thoughtful film with a kind of dark, not action-y performance from Jason Statham.
Jason Statham proves he's actually a really good actor in that film.
Yeah.
Like, he's a very well-rounded, ranged actor. Really, we should just see a Colin Farrell, Jason Statham film. Can we just see that? Like,
and of course, there'll be Expendables 2 coming out soon with everybody back in that, too.
Expendables was terrible. What a terrible movie that was.
I liked Expendables. I mean, it wasn't great, but it was exactly what it was supposed to be. And come on, you have to admit that it had some great scenes in it, even if like the movie itself was just an excuse to get all the people together. Come on, Statham beating the shit out of the dudes playing basketball.
That was great. I will watch anything with Statham and anything with Dolph Lundgren, because I fucking love Dolph Lundgren. The thing is, like, Sylvester Stallone, and I know Stallone gave us Rambo,
yeah,
which, like, the last Rambo film, which was amazing, but his big problem is...
Rocky Balboa, also a great movie. Yeah, Expendables, I kind of expected a little better writing after those two, but yeah.
Sly, if you're listening, which you're not, but if you, let's pretend
nobody's
you are.
Nobody's listening. I'm pretty sure our listenership, as of the last podcast, was fucking zero.
Probably. But just please, Sly, stop with the hair, okay? Stop it. Your hair is gray. Let it be gray and stop dyeing it that fucking, like, black as my ex-wife's soul black. type of like, holy shit, that's dark hair. It's not natural. My beautiful girlfriend is a hairstylist. Like, she's one of the best in town, probably the best. She knows that shit right away. We can't, you might as well have fucking plugs like a dude from Hellboy. You know, it looks like doll's hair, you know, like, dude, stop it, Sly. Stop wearing makeup. You just look like you look like one of the Kardashians or something. Please stop. And otherwise, you're awesome, and I love your stuff. I don't care if you're short, you know, just, and also don't wear platform shoes anymore. We know you're short, Mr. Stallone. Just fucking be cool, man. Just be cool. That is, like, my only complaint. Like, that is so distracting in The Expendables that I hated the film.
If you may allow me to rope this back within reason, we were going to make this a short podcast, and we've already spent an absurd amount of time talking about everything but Caligula, so we should probably cover Caligula.
Very good. You shouldn't even edit that out. You should keep that in there.
Oh, yeah. I'm keeping that in.
Okay. Okay. Good. I was actually just thinking about, like, no, let's talk about Caligula. Caligula. Okay.
Okay.
Ryan, I convinced you to read it.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of the writer, so you go ahead first.
I was underwhelmed. I kind of expected from, okay, like, you talked it up like it was some crazy, like, vulgar, over-the-top shit. I didn't really find it all that vulgar, over-the-top, really, mm-hmm. but that may say something about me.
Referencing back to the whole Bridesmaids conversation we just had, yeah.
I was thinking you were going to reference back the A Serbian Film conversation earlier.
Oh, that too. That kind of all hooks together, so.
But, I mean, I kind of expected something different, but I also expected to be more of, like, this crazy historical thing. I didn't expect it to be, I mean, yet again, spoilers. I'm going to have to spoil this to talk about it, obviously.
Yeah.
I didn't expect it to be a story about this single guy going to kill Caligula and then finding out that Caligula can't be killed because he's immortal and he's, like,
he's Satan.
A demon. And it's, like, then it brings in, like, this Judeo-Christian demon and supposedly, like, the crucifixion of Christ, like, allowed evil into the world. And I'm like, hold on, what is this horse shit? Come on. And that was, like, that killed a lot of the story for me right there when it started, like, taking this turn. I kind of hoped that when he stabbed Caligula in the head and he didn't die, it was one of those, like, dude gets a spike in the brain and it only modifies his personality, doesn't kill him type deals. I was like, maybe he's just so crazy that he didn't even notice. Mm-hmm. And then it turns out that he's immortal and can't be killed. I was like, oh, God damn it. I was just hoping for these being, like, crazy assholes in ancient Rome and it being mildly historical and not going into supernatural shit. That kind of killed it for me. I don't know why, but it just, like, it just didn't work for me. I just did not feel it.
You don't like it that if it pulled what I call a Jeff Lindsay on you. For those of you who don't know, and probably Ryan himself, Jeff Lindsay is the writer of the Dexter books, and Dexter was a great book or somewhat series of books, and then...
Yeah, I heard first book great, second book okay, third book terrible, fourth book mediocre.
And the fact that he turned him into, like, some kind of Mesopotamian murder god.
Oh, yeah, like, by the third book, it's, like, having this stuff with ancient gods and cults and crap like that, yeah.
Yeah, which I don't know about you, as a Dexter fan, I find that rather disturbing.
Not in a good way either. Fans of the books did not like it. Like, fans of the first two books thought the third one was terrible. Also, didn't he end up, spoilers, didn't in the books he end up, like, also turning, like, Astrid and Cody into killers? Like, teaching them Harry's code or something like that?
Most of my knowledge of the second book is from Wikipedia and Amazon.com reviews. So
I can probably say the same for myself. I've never read any of them. I didn't even read the first one because I like the series enough that I don't think the books are going to add anything good to it.
The first book is enjoyable.
And
I recommend it.
Yeah. From what I heard, the first book is basically pretty similar to the first season of the show.
The first season of the show is the adaptation of the book.
So,
yeah.
And everything after that. I mean, and I don't think Dexter has made too bad of a misstep yet. So, I don't think Dexter has had a bad season so far, so I don't want to fucking ruin it.
I need to watch last season.
It was good. I think you'll like it a lot. I think it's a lot more... It's different from what they've been doing the past few seasons, so it's a nice break from what it felt like was getting a little formulaic with between, like...
Cool.
Though, I mean, it is formulaic in that every season he's, like, chasing a fucking serial killer.
I was gonna say, like, I guess I'm okay to watch it now because I didn't want to watch it before because it reminded me too much of my crazy ex-girlfriend, and also that means I could probably get to the Glades again, which is cool.
Yeah, second season was not as good as the first, sadly.
Saw that coming. Yeah, it's so Caligula for me. I kind of had an idea this is what happened because David Lapham is one of my favorite writers in comics. He's currently writing Deadpool Max, which is a fantastic fucking book. Don't know if I like the art that much half the time, but the writing is exactly how I always wanted Deadpool. He used to write Stray Bullets is his creation. Stray Bullets is one of those, like, you know, one of those comics where you'll have stories that always end in murder and death. Like, you know, girl geek finds herself. She's trying to discover herself and finds a group of friends and then they go off to the forest and they murder her. So when they try to rape her, you know, like that kind of stuff, like it's really dark. And so yeah. David Lapham is no stranger to being excessively dark with his stuff. And I think we found out recently he got a start in Valiant Comics.
Yes. Yes, he did. Back in the very early days of, of Valiant.
Yeah. Valiant's back too. So
yeah, we're going to have a podcast about that sometime. It's on the list.
I need to try dropping them a line so I can see if we can get something to talk about from them. So
yeah.
Anyway, I enjoyed Caligula because I knew exactly what I was getting. For one, Avatar Press is like, what was it? Wolfskin by Warren Ellis. It's just like, watch a guy murder a bunch of people for 4 issues. Oh, Wolfskin Annual, more murder. Wolfskin, like, and the art was pretty cool, but it's just a guy murdering people. There's not much of a plot. Caligula is more of a, there's a plot. And I was actually pleasantly surprised that there was he went with a non-historical type of thing with the supernatural demon. He's basically Satan and then he's a big fuck you to the religious people and stuff. And I'm like, it's because Lapham's just trying to write a book that pisses a bunch of people off because Avatar Press knows that they get sales that way. A lot of gore hounds read their books.
Yeah. Though the art style obviously did not play that up too much. It did not play up the gore and sexuality as much.
You don't think,
it had a limited palette. It was a more simplistic style of art. So it's not like fucking Tim Vigil's Faust where it's like you can see the texture of the intestine.
Okay, just to be fair to everyone listening right now, so the three of you, please understand that when Ryan talks this stuff down a little bit, you're gonna see like neck stump fucking, babies being eaten, like it's really sick. Like Caligula
stuff that doesn't
sick.
Bother me at all.
Yeah, like the main character is like does stuff like give blowjobs and get fucked in the ass and get fish hooks in his eyes and all kinds of shit.
Ass yeah. fucked by horse. Yeah.
Ass
you got a problem
a horse.
With horses fucking you in the ass. A, don't read Caligula. B, don't go to Human Claw.
I was gonna say I was
Human
waiting
Claw
for the
joke. Yeah.
Yeah, I was waiting for
the Human Claw joke.
Hi, horse dick. Bam. So yeah, Human Claw. It's not the same place anymore. So yeah, suburb of Seattle. For those of you who don't know, where some guy got his colon perforated by a horse.
I want to see the documentary about that.
Yeah,
there's a documentary about like the incident and it drawing attention to Human Claw. I forget what it's called, but yeah, I wanted to see that, but I haven't been able to find a copy of it.
We need the Don't Do This at Home podcast, like episode where we talk about a Serbian film and the Human Claw documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, Caligula, I like the art style. It was a bit on the simple side, very European in its delivery. Mm-hmm. I assume German nobile, because it looks like noble, but there's an I in there. I assume I assume it's a he. It could be a she, German. German nobile is a European or South American with escaped Germans. Great. Now I'm going to get an email. I don't know, but I like the art is what I'm saying. I enjoyed it.
They're an Argentinian clone is what you're saying.
Right. Right. And I exactly like the boys from Argentina. And I will say that while I would give this a 6 out of 10, it's a really fun 6.5 out of 10.
Yeah. I mean, like, you also have to understand that I don't read comics.
Yeah.
And I don't like most of them that I do read. So for me to say that I didn't like it that much for as far as comics go, it was still pretty interesting. I mean, it wasn't bad. It just wasn't great. And I'm glad they tied it up in a sort of quick way. It didn't drag on for 12 yeah. issues of crap or something. It wasn't padded.
I like to rectify or change what I said earlier. I would give it 7.5 fists. The fisting score is 7.5 on this one for me, out of 10.
I'm not even sure if I can give it a score because, like, comics, it's just I'm so disconnected from them and care so little about them. It's hard for me to even make a value judgment trying to be even vaguely mm-hmm. objective. Even being completely subjective, I'm not sure what I would give it.
Well, at least you're being honest, yeah.
It's like when you read a book or you watch a movie and you go, okay, whatever. And then never think about it again. You're like, I'll never watch that again. I mean, it wasn't bad. It wasn't good. I just don't care. I'll never see it again. I don't know if you would call that a 5 out of 10. I don't know if you'd call that passable, like a 6 out of 10.
Yeah, 6 out of 10.
I mean, it's one of those things that hits right in the passable range where it's like, it's okay. It just does nothing for you in any way that makes you love it, hate it, feel really anything about it. So it didn't bring up any emotions in me, really. I didn't dislike it. How many issues was it?
Six.
It felt shorter. But
it's because it's all decompressed.
After about the third or fourth issue, I found myself skimming a little more and not paying as much attention to every panel like I was before, but just trying to get through with it because, I mean, I was reading them all straight through in one setting.
If I was giving something a 7.5 out of 10, it probably means I won't pick it up in trade if I have the singles. However, I would totally buy this in trade, a trade paperback to put on my bookshelf. Mainly so when my girlfriend's son's friends come over, they can pick it off the shelf and be horrified. But it's definitely like, I'm also a big fan of the historical Caligula. I love the history behind it. Although historians, this is not a historical piece. It's no. Like, yeah, the dude gets fucked by a horse for fuck's sake. So, you know, like
a talking demon horse.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Not historical.
Yeah.
There were talking demon horses, but Caligula did not have one.
Right. The talking demon horse. Horses are more towards the Dacians. They had talking demon horses. That's a historical fact, kids. And so I did enjoy Caligula. I thought it'd be kind of fun to talk about. But I will agree in the fact it's not overly memorable. It's just like, you know, Avatar Press said, we need you to write something that is going to get you a paycheck and sell more books. Because that's what sells. That's why most of Avatar yeah. Press's stuff is crossed, which I don't know if you've read, which it's kind of like Walking Dead with more face fucking.
The only thing I've read that has probably come out in years is like Esther City, The Dark Age. And that's probably the only thing I've read. Oh, and those, was it Project Superpowers or whatever that
you recommended
when it first came out? You were like, hey, this is new and vaguely interesting because you were still doing comic related stuff. That may have been back when you were still doing All the Rage. So
holy crap, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, but I mean, you basically said, oh yeah, they're doing this thing and it's like partially done by Alex Ross. I'm like, I like Alex Ross. I'm a fan of Astro City. I'll read it. Why not? So those are the last things I read until Hellraiser and Caligula lately.
Right. And speaking of Dynamite Comics, I am moving from Caligula to something that will probably embarrass this writer if you ever heard it, is Eric Trautman is the writer on Flash Gordon Zeitgeist, which is a series out from Dynamite right now.
Yeah, you mentioned that earlier. I was wondering about Zeitgeist. Tell me about this Zeitgeist you speak of.
Exactly. It highly
recommended.
I was like,
is it a Flash Gordon thing where it's a movie filled with conspiracy theories and talks about how the World Trade Center was destroyed by the U.S. government? Is that what it is? Flash Gordon blames the World Trade Center on the U.S. government?
No. It's a series out right now with Eric Trautman, who's a really good writer, and Alex Ross on art direction and plot direction as well. So it's the plot and script is by Eric, and Alex Ross does the art direction and plot and then you have a couple of artists work on the art. The art's okay, you know. It's actually pretty good. It's very pulpy. It's very well paced. Eric was born to write Flash Gordon, like the classic style of Flash Gordon, like the one, like a mix between the Flash Gordon serials and the campy 80s film. right? So that it's a nice mix between both. Flash Gordon is more of a badass. It's very pulpy. There's Nazis that show up, you know, because Eric's really into military stuff, which I appreciate. So am I. You know, like, he used to write Checkmate with Greg Rucka and did his own Checkmate comics and G.I. Robot and stuff like that. So he's got a really good grasp of this kind of stuff. And he also did the Perfect Dark comic books, by the way. I highly recommend it if you like pulp adventure 1930s era. Totally recommend it. Picking it up. It's totally unlike the TV series, which, as I said in my Facebook post, insults shit. Like, it shit wrote Sci-Fi Channel and said, we as feces are incredibly insulted that we're being compared to this terrible TV show.
Your eyes will get AIDS if you watch it.
Dude, the AIDS in your eyes will get AIDS. It's, in fact, then it will kill itself. But the AIDS won't go away. It is the worst television show ever made. Period.
My herpes got AIDS watching Flash Gordon. Yeah,
terrible, terrible show. It is the worst show ever in television history. There are some bad shows out there, but I mean, a nice mix of like.
At least that
better.
We've watched. Out of the shows we've watched, that may be the worst ever.
Automan is Emmy Award material, comparatively.
I mean, I haven't seen everything. I'm sure there's something I would despise even more.
Oh, yeah. There's probably a Mexican TV show out there that's about opening cans with a man's dick, but that, you know, like.
Yeah, I think that was called Ugly Betty.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I watched 3 seconds of that once. That show sucked.
But, Yeah, you also hated Haven a lot, too.
I didn't hate... Okay, I did watch Haven a few times because of said crazy ex-girlfriend. However...
You hated on Haven a lot, I should...
Well, it's terrible. It's a terrible show.
I watched the first few episodes. I thought it was terrible, but in a typical sci-fi sort of way. That all the shows are terrible.
To be fair, the superfluous cast, or the non-main two characters, they're not bad. Isn't Eric Balfour on that show?
I don't even remember.
He does a pretty good job, if I remember correctly. But the two main leads in that show are the worst actors I have ever seen on television, except for the ones in... No, actually, no. The actors on Flash Gordon were better. They were terrible actors.
You're lying. You're fucking lying to people, Steve.
No, I'm
whatever
not.
You, don't watch Flash Gordon to compare. It's don't do it.
Oh, damn it, dude. I was going to see. But Haven had some okay stuff. It's still better than Flash Gordon by leaps and bounds. Like, there's no arguing.
Yeah,
that,
Flash Gordon was a science fiction show in which no science fiction took place.
Exactly.
That was the problem.
Hey, now you're on a different planet. Here's a different camera filter. You know, like, yeah. This is bad.
Well, it had the stuff on the other planet, but Flash Gordon didn't really go to the other planet. They were two separate places. It was mainly people showing up in the modern day and, like, Flash Gordon having to have, like, stupid fights with them. But the thing is, he's not competent Flash Gordon. He's incompetent Flash Gordon.
Can't believe we're talking
about
this.
Who doesn't know what's going on.
Oh, God. So I was going to say...
It really made the Flash Gordon 80s film look great.
Oh, and in this TV show, there are two worlds. There's outside of Vancouver and Sawasin, which is where you get the ferry from. Those of you listening might remember Sawasin from, they called it Earth on Battlestar Galactica, the reboot of Battlestar Galactica, the first Earth they find. Oh, spoilers. Hey, man, it's been like 5 years.
It's way past the spoiler stage.
But the people around here joke of it as Sawasin Earth. So it's, or Towasin, if you want to mispronounce it. So anyway... Yeah, Flash Gordon, terrible. I can't believe we talked about that more than the awesome comic that's out currently.
Hey, you brought it up.
That's true, I did.
I buried it so deeply in my memory that mentioning Flash Gordon didn't even make me think of it at all.
Oh, dude, yeah, it's such a terrible show.
Probably because I only watched, like, maybe 2 episodes.
I watched 5 episodes.
I know, you got a lot further than I did, I think.
I did it for science, man.
Yeah, I was just like, nope, that's it. No, too far.
I felt like a monkey that was shot into space in a cancer rocket. It was terrible.
See, even I had the sense to stop with Flash Gordon and Dragonlance, but you had to keep going.
I do it for science. I do it so you guys don't have to.
I don't have to drink the whole carton of milk to know it's spoiled.
For some reason, I gotta basically have to relive a moment from Alien Nation.
Alien Nation. No, there was a good TV show.
No, man, that TV show was awesome. Better than the film. And the film was pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I finally saw the film, like, years later. I saw the film probably in the last 5 years. That was the first time I ever saw it. Whereas I watched the TV show when it was on.
So now we're at the end of the podcast, Ryan. Is there anything else you want to say?
I guess the usual, if you are interested in anything about me, check out my website, ryanspeck.com, which will be linked in the show notes. The same for Steve. Obviously, I would link Diary of a Grognerd, which you should check out if you are super bored.
I need to update that.
Yeah, weren't you going to put something about Gattacon?
Yeah, I was waiting for the podcast. I was waiting for the podcast.
2 weeks late now.
I know, but I was waiting for the podcast for some reason. The Jules to get the podcast up on Geeky Pleasures, which are up there now. And I'm just lazy. I'm not blaming Jules at all. She's awesome. I'm just really lazy. And yeah, I've been really busy with other things like work. So
I finally watched the first episode of Mystery Science Theater 3000 to do another thing on Media Gauntlet since October, maybe November. So I'll be writing about something on there probably in the next week or two, if Skyrim lets up.
I was going to say, check me out on Diary of a Grog Nerd, or you can just go to my website, which is mediagauntlet.com/SG Saunders. It'll be linked in the show notes. Don't worry.
Or if you are currently on mediagauntlet.com right now listening to it streaming, which you probably are, scroll down to the bottom of the page and under hosted sites, it'll say Steve Saunders right there. So
yeah, pretty much.
Oh, and yet again, as I have forgotten to mention regularly, if you do have any questions, commentary, you can either scroll to the bottom of the page and click on the contact Media Gauntlet link and fill out the form, or just drop us an email at media@mediagauntlet.com, media@mediagauntlet.com.
Not meat.
And meat. You will be able to be read on the air by people who do not keep on topic.
Yeah, exactly. And also, there is a comments section, isn't there?
Yeah, there's comments on every episode. You can add a comment if you want at the bottom of the page. So if you have any questions or comments or want to tell us that we suck, feel free.
Actually, I would like to offer the challenge for people to comment. For fuck's sake, comment. Say something. Even if it's like, fuck you, Steve, say it. I would really enjoy that.
Yeah, as far as numbers go, we have a good idea of how many people are subscribing to the RSS feed. None. How many are downloading the episodes? None. But we are not having a good idea of how many are actually listening to the streaming, because we have no metrics on that. So if you're listening to the stream, drop us a line. Say hello. Leave a comment.
Right, and based on my Facebook feedback, I know some of you are listening. James and Mike and if several other people like that are I know that are listening to this. Also, spread the word. If you liked what you listened to, tell people.
Also, we apologize if you liked what you listened to.
Yeah, wow, what kind of sick fuck are you?
Maybe we should recommend some better podcasts and make a podcast of recommending other podcasts.
That would be actually pretty good, although I never listen to other podcasts, so I don't know. Neither do I,
which is probably why ours is so bad. We're not stealing enough good ideas from other people.
We need to plunder ideas and become Plundercast.
Well, I have a plunder few, fist? I guess.
Plunder fist, ho!
So much editing.